what I used to tell myself is, it is not normal to have a headache every single day. And I would be like, right, not okay yet. Because I'd be like, oh, things are getting better. I'd be like, but you still are in pain every single day. This isn't normal. You're not supposed to feel like this. I don't even know how to explain what it's like to have an excruciating headache every day for years, but it eats away at you. And then the thoughts that start, my brain's really good at beating myself up.
There is always hope, and you are not alone.
Hi, I'm Christabel Braden, and this is my brain injury podcast, Hope Survives. Here we share information, education, and support for the brain injury community. This is an uplifting podcast to bring hope to your darkest days. As a survivor of traumatic brain injury and multiple concussions, I know what it's like to struggle to find hope. I don't want anyone to feel as alone as I did, and that's why I started my online community called Hope After Head Injury. This podcast is an extension of that, and I'd love to invite you to join along as we explore the realities of life with brain injury, with messages of encouragement, interviews with doctors and professionals, and survivor stories. No matter where you're at on your journey, there is always hope. With a little hope, you can make it through today. With a little faith, someday you'll get through the pain. Just a little love is enough to light the way through your darkest night. Hope survives. Hope survives. Hey everyone, welcome back to Hope Survives podcast. So glad that you are listening and joining us today. We've got another great episode ahead. I just want to say how great it is to be back here, putting out new episodes again after our break this summer. This was my first week back to posting on social media regularly, putting out new podcast episodes regularly after I took an extended brain break this summer, which was much needed. But I'm happy to report that I'm feeling great. I have done brain injury rehab exercises and worked on my autonomic system. A lot of the stuff we talk about on this podcast, I put into practice and it has really helped. And it is great to be back with another episode back to back for the last couple weeks and to be posting on Instagram and Facebook again. So last week's episode with Maddie about finding yourself again after brain injury, we posted a quote from her on the Instagram, and a lot of you really resonated with that. She talked about the struggle of realizing that you might not make a full recovery, but that even in the middle of that, you can still find yourself. You can still find things that make you happy. You can still be yourself, even if you're not the person that maybe you were before the injury. And that topic seemed to resonate with a lot of you from last week's episode. And so this week, we're actually going to go a little bit deeper into the whole dealing with headaches and concussion and chronic pain for years. Today's podcast guest is another story that's very different from Maddie's story last week. And I love that because all brain injuries are different. Your story is going to look different than my story is going to look different than someone else's because our brains are different. So we're going to have slightly different symptoms, different reactions to different treatments. We're also going to have had it at different times and have different responses to it. And so there's no one cookie cutter way to have a brain injury or a concussion. And today's guest has had over 10 concussions. We have Bella Page from Post Concussion. She started her own podcast, which she'll share with you guys about. And she's had over 10 concussions and experienced post-concussion syndrome for years. She hit a really low spot, and she's going to talk to us a little bit about this. I just want to give a little bit of a trigger warning for anyone with mental health and depression. She attempted to take her own life at one point, and she has come out on the other side in a way that wants to help other people. And so she's openly sharing her story with concussion and depression, and I really admire her for that. So I'm really excited for you all to get to hear her story today. Through our interview, she's going to share about how she got her concussion and hiding her symptoms. And, you know, somebody like Maddie from last week, who's in a wheelchair, Maddie, you know, she never really could hide her symptoms because they're just a part of the physical outside part. But for Bella Page, who you're going to hear from today, she had a very different experience. Hers was very invisible. She really tried to fake it and hide it, which led to her getting a lot more concussions. And so thanks so much for listening today. I hope that this episode's an encouragement to you. And I really enjoyed hearing Bella's story. This was kind of my first time talking to her and hearing her full story, even though I've known her on social media for a while and known about her support community and her podcast. And so I think it's going to be a great episode. Thank you guys so much for tuning in today. And let's go ahead and get started. I started Hope After Head Injury 10 years ago, and it has grown into a global online support community. You can get involved and check out more of the online resources we have available at hopeafterheadinjury.com. Connect with survivors, caregivers, and family members through our Zoom meetings, our Facebook support group, or the Brain Injury Bible Study group. I remember what it's like to feel so alone with brain injury, and my goal with these groups is for you to know that you are not alone and to be able to connect with others going through similar circumstances. We are in this together. Now, I want to thank you for listening to the podcast and remind you that this podcast is for education and informational purposes only and not intended for medical advice. If you need specific medical advice, please consult your physician. Now, thanks for listening, and let's get on with the show. Today, I'm here with Bella Page from Post Concussion Inc., and I'm so excited to finally have you on here, Bella. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, welcome, and thank you for actually having me on. We've been trying to schedule this for like a year.
I know. I think it has been like a year. And then One of us would have a brain injury flare up, and then we'd have to rest, and the other one would get out of it, and then we'd have to reschedule. But finally, we made it.
We did. It's great.
Yeah, thank you. So Bella has her own podcast called Post Concussion, and she also runs a support group. And so do you want to share a little bit about what you do, and then we can get into your story?
Yeah, for sure. So I do a lot, probably too much for somebody with a couple head injuries. But what I do is the podcast, and the podcast is very similar. We do a lot of like doctor interviews, survivor interviews, and then also I try to get like family members and things to get different perspectives of what it's like to live with a brain injury or with someone who's suffering, because it was something really missed in my recovery. No one asked my parents how they were doing or my siblings. And so I do that. And then I have a support network called Concussion Connect, which is a great community of survivors who talk on it sometimes all day because I get the notifications, and we have monthly themes. So last month was mental health and depression. This month is socializing. So we just focus on different aspects and struggles that survivors deal with. And then there's support groups on that weekly as well.
Love that. So share some of your story. What made you, well, let's just go back. Let's start with your story. And then I'm going to ask too many questions at the same
time. That's
fine. So one at a time. Why don't you share some of your story?
Yeah, for sure. So I used to be a show jumper for horses, and I used to travel kind of all over the world for it. And when I was younger, about 15, I was already traveling, and I started to get headaches every day from the multiple concussions I had had in the past. And all the ones in the past, I had, it's about 2 weeks or a few months that I'd be off for, but I didn't stop doing what I was doing. I never took a break. I think the longest break I took was a week. One time I got one, ended up in the hospital in an ambulance, and then I was at the next horse show the week after. So I wasn't good about taking breaks. And then once those headaches started, they didn't stop. And then I didn't tell anyone. I used to tell myself it was stress. Stress, heat stroke, not eating, exercising too much. I had like 100 excuses that I told myself internally on why I had a headache every day. And then after about 8 months of hiding it, it kind of hit me like a brick wall. And all of a sudden, I couldn't get out of bed, couldn't go to school, couldn't ride. My mental health tanked along with it. And that started off about 6 years of head pain every single day and living at the doctors and trying to show and compete horses at the same time. I moved away from home a few times to try again, and I just wouldn't stop training, and that didn't help me at all because I wouldn't let my brain rest. And then eventually my headaches got better, and I kind of forgot about my mental health, so my mental health tanked. And then I hit a very low spot in my life, and after that, I decided I should probably help people, prevent them from making all of the mistakes I made over the last 10 years, because there was a lot.
Yeah, so what year was it that you started to realize you were having problems?
10 years ago, I guess, okay. Is when they started and didn't stop, and then the concussion 2 years before that lasted me about 3 months. But I've had over 10 concussions, so they've all been spread out over the last 20 plus years of my life.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Yeah.
So how did you, when you started to realize you were having symptoms, what, you said that you just kind of kept pushing through and pushing through. So do you want to talk a little bit about that process?
Yeah. So super competitive. And one of the things about brain injuries, as most survivors know, is you can hide it pretty well, depending on your symptoms. My biggest symptom was pain. So if I could push past the pain, no one knew there was anything wrong, other than the odd moment where I'd like space out during a conversation due to a lot of pain. But what I did was I was competing. I wasn't living at home. So I wasn't with my parents and my girlfriend's family that I was with. Once in a while, I would ask questions, but like they didn't raise me. They didn't know how off I kind of became. But the adrenaline rush from competing and riding actually kept me going, probably longer than it should have. And so I just kept going. I just wouldn't tell anyone. And there was a few times I did the same thing and I didn't learn from my mistake. So when this all started, I was in high school. And so my last 2 years of high school, grade 11 or 11th grade, depending on where you're from, I got exempted from, essentially I went like once a week, I think. And then I wrote exams at home and handed them in, and they gave me the grades. And then the next year was kind of the same. And I started telling everyone I was doing better, and I wasn't. I just got better at it. It's essentially what happened is I got better at dealing with the pain.
You got better at your coping strategies.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Much better. I was better at hiding it. I could like go out from the house. I could go to school all day once in a while, and I could ride horses every day. And so I just told everyone I was doing great. And then I moved across the country because I was like, oh, I'm doing great. Like everything is wonderful. And then what happened is I started university and riding competitively at the exact same time after going from barely being in school to riding, but not in a competitive program. So it's not the same intensity. And in 3 months, my vision disappeared from pushing myself too hard. And then I wasn't going to school. And then I had to call my sister and say, I'm like really behind in class and I can't read. And I had one program where you had to read a book a day and or a week and then write on it. And I was like, I can't even read a page. And I just I was super competitive. Like riding horses was my life. It was supposed to be my career as well. So when I was going through that, I quit school before I quit horses every time. So I was still riding horses. I'd like get out of bed, go ride horses all day, and then go to sleep just so I could ride and compete. And eventually, once my vision disappeared, and it disappeared for hours, and I lived alone, I was done. I had to go home. I was like, I don't think I should be doing this.
But so it took you kind of hitting rock bottom of extremes.
A couple times. I'm very competitive, very intense person. So I am not great at taking breaks. Like it's definitely like a lot of my symptoms lasting so long, or the way I handled my situation for sure.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, I think about how we can fool ourselves with our invisible injury. I think about this a lot because sometimes, you know, we look in the mirror and we think, I should be fine. Like, what's wrong with me? Snap out of it, you know? And you think that's really unkind when someone else says it to you when you're having a bad day, but we say it to ourselves, and there's a balance between pushing ourselves in a healthy way towards our recovery and fooling ourselves in terms of thinking that, you know, oh, I am fine, and being in denial.
Well, what I used to tell myself is, you're not. It is not normal to have a headache every single day. And I would be like, right, not okay yet. Because I'd be like, oh, things are getting better. I'd be like, but you still are in pain every single day. This isn't normal. You're not supposed to feel like this. And so you kind of get good at it. And the other thing is, I had this fear that if people knew how bad my situation was, they wouldn't let me ride horses. And so being a competitive athlete, that was told she was going to the Olympics at a very young age. I couldn't steer clear of it. Like I couldn't get it out of my head. So I just would lie to them, lied to doctors all the time, lied to my parents just so that they wouldn't like make me stop, essentially.
Yeah. So what happened after you realized that your vision was going and you couldn't keep going what you're doing?
Yeah. So I moved home all the way back across the country and moved back in with my mom. And that was a good choice because I was struggling. And then because I am one of those people that never stops, I continued to go to school. I just switched to the school here. And then what I did is I went and did it properly this time. I got accommodations, so I didn't need to go to school. I could just participate and get like do the tests, do the exams. I'm a very self-taught person. That's how my brain works. So it was okay. Because sitting in a classroom was a terrible situation for me between the lights, noise, talking, echoes, all that. And so I just learned how to do it from home. COVID schooling would have been amazing for me because I was better sitting at home than walking into a building. But so I did that. And then I kept riding because I couldn't stop. And then I went to school and I did graduate. What I did was I took less courses for longer. So instead of taking like a break, where most people take a break May till August in college, university, I just kept going and I just took less. So my course load was less, but then I could keep up with it and still manage to graduate and things like that. And once I did graduate, I decided to try again and show horses. But at that point, my headaches had disappeared or gotten a lot better. Like I still have them to this day once in a while, but they're not like excruciating every day. And so I tried one more time and I went from 0 to 100, which was probably a bad idea. Like I hadn't been riding for about maybe 8 months then because my like show horses, one of them had to be retired and the other situations in my life that happened. And I went from none to riding like, I think I rode like 6 horses a day for a bit for a month. And I ended up puking over a bucket. And when the pain came back, I realized that I couldn't deal with it anymore because when you're not used to it anymore, you realize how severe it is, like how intense all that pain is and like not being able to think properly and get out of bed. And all of these things came back right when I started, like a month later, I was done. So that is when I decided to put my health first for the first time in my life, which took me, how long did that take me to figure out? 7 years. So it was a long process. Yeah, that's for sure.
So what does putting your health first in your life look like?
Yeah, so it's like now I work for myself, so I work from home, and it means not getting mad at myself for my to-do lists because I make them and I make them. So how I do it is I do a to-do list in each day, and it's okay to just draw arrows and scratch out entire days and try not to like beat myself up about it, because I forget sometimes that I am still recovering, I think, a lot of the time now, because I do good for longer stretches now. It's like a few weeks. I do really good. Or in the winter, I'm really bad because I don't like the cold. So I'll work like a crazy person. And so I will sit and work. And then I ended up in the hospital this February because I pushed myself to extreme pain. And so I just try to focus on like not pushing myself, putting my mental health before my physical health, which I know sounds backwards. But for me, my mental health is more important. So it's just finding a balance of what I can do physically and then how keeping up with my mental health. Because when my mental health tanks, then so do all my symptoms. So I try to keep that first.
Well, and it's interesting because with concussions and brain injury, our mental health and our brain health and our physical health are all really tied together. So what does it mean to you to maintain your mental health, and what are some things that you do?
Yeah. So I just laugh because it sounds wild. So I'm an adrenaline junkie, like a huge one, and it doesn't sound very typical. And that's probably why I have so many head injuries and why I will likely get more. And I am aware of that. So I ride dirt bikes now for my mental health. And that sounds like a terrible idea. My parents hate it. My family hates it, but I do better. A lot better with it. And I crashed a few weeks ago and ended up in a hospital and had to call my family to tell them, and it was terrible. They're like, how's your head? I was like, oh, my head's good. They're like, oh, okay, whatever. Like, they're all like, only thing that matters is your brain. But I do that. Walking is a big one for me. So I got a dog after losing my other dog last fall, and she helps me a lot because it gets me out of the house. So I can do things, because when you work for yourself or you have a brain injury, like your schedule doesn't work like, I guess, your typical North American schedule, 9-to-5 life. Like at 5 o'clock, everyone wants to do something. Well, sometimes I do better right in the middle of the day. So I work in the morning. The afternoons are like my go for a walk, get outside, fresh air, and then I'll work at night. Like, it's just how my brain works.
You need an extended break.
But my breaks are at weird times, right? So having my dog really helps, because I go for walks a lot, get energy. Yoga is a huge one for me. And then I do a lot of like mindfulness, things like that, because my mental health, I had severe depression. I'm an attempted suicide survivor. So I definitely have to put it first, which is why I possibly am risking myself getting injured, but I've accepted that that risk is worth me doing better mentally every day than like sitting in bed, bawling my eyes out and shaking. So this is better.
Thank you for sharing some of that. And you know, the things you're talking about, going outside and mindfulness, and that's all really good for your brain and for your nervous system too. So do you mind sharing a little bit more about your mental health journey and how that's been connected to your recovery?
For sure. So my mental health originally tanked. I always say tanked because it just sounds like it like goes down the drain. And that started when, after that 8 months, when all the symptoms got really bad, because all of a sudden I was like isolated from the world. I would go to school and nobody knew how much I was struggling, because you couldn't tell that I was screaming on the inside in pain when I did manage to show up. So I would go, but then all of my other world of friends who were competitive show jumpers and traveling the world, that was hard to watch. It's not that I wasn't proud of them, but it was hard not to be a part of it anymore. So what I actually did for about a year is I deleted, or I guess deactivated, all of my social media and just took myself away from it, because I almost isolated myself more, but it helped not watching the world continue to go while I wasn't doing anything. And so the frustration of being a competitive athlete was really tough because in the news at the time, it was always about this person retires from the NFL after 40 concussions and 20-year career. I was still in high school. So it was really hard to be like, well, why am I like forced to retire already? And so that was really tough. And just like the chronic pain. Chronic pain is, I don't even know how to explain what it's like to have an excruciating headache every day for years, but it eats away at you. And then the thoughts that start, my brain's really good at beating myself up. Like I had a conversation with my brother a month or two ago when I hit like a down spot. Winter wouldn't end here, and seasonal depression is a big thing for me. And so I was having a really hard time. And when I have a hard time, my brain starts shooting off every bad thing that's gone on in my life. And so all of a sudden it's like, I like had a breakdown. I was like, I have been through way too much for someone my age. I was like, this isn't normal. Like I shouldn't have gone through, like there's the things on the podcast I share. And then there's a whole other side of my life that has never been shared. And it's like, I shouldn't have gone through all this. And so like mental breakdown kind of thing. And so dealing with my mental health has been like my biggest challenge, because when my physical health got better, my parents tried, like they tried to put me in therapies, and I was super stubborn. Like I talked to the therapist, my mom's like, you're never going back. I was like, no, it's like, I didn't like what they had to say. So then I'd go to another one, and it was just a lot of that. And so when my physical health got better, I kept telling myself that if the headaches went away, my depression would go away. And they were like intertwined, and that's how it worked. But it's not exactly the reality of the situation. It did get better. But what happened is I have a tell. So I always tell people to figure out what their tells are and then to tell their family what their tells are. So my tell is I run. So when my brain is done, essentially, like I can't think, I get the shakes and stuff like that. When my anxiety and my stress and depression thoughts are really bad, I start running because I don't like running. So what I do is I run. And so when I run, I can't think. And so it's like a counterintuitive thing. And so what happened when my headaches got better, a bunch of other things went on that year. And then that's when I decided to attempt to take my own life. And it didn't make sense to me because I thought I was better. Like my headaches weren't as bad, but my mental health hadn't been addressed. I never got taught how to get those thoughts to stop, any of those things. So I got placed into mandatory therapy. So I had to be an outpatient and go to therapy, or I had to be admitted. So I chose the outpatient life. And so I did therapy, and I actually clicked with the therapist for the first time in my life. And that's where I learned that you have to keep trying and find a therapist that works with how you work, because we all work very differently. And so doing that helped me so, so much. What happened was in therapy for me, I finally clicked with my therapist. And that's why I always tell people like to try and then try more than a few sessions, because the first few sessions, you're just filling them in on your life because there's always so much to explain. And then what we did was we worked on mindfulness. And so what that did is it worked for me, and it worked in a way that those thoughts and those spiraling thoughts, I still get them to this day sometimes, but I can get them to go away in under a minute, where before they used to start and spiral to the point where I couldn't get them to stop. So being able to control what your brain does and how your brain kind of lies to yourself helped me so much. Like to this day, even I don't think I would be where I am today. I'm like actually happy and at peace with my life, which I didn't believe was possible years ago.
Can you talk a little bit more about mindfulness and how to practice that?
Sure. So it's like about being in the moment. And so what we did is the grounding technique kind of thing didn't really work for me, but this did. So what we did was you'd pick an object in front of you, and it is like a grounding technique, but a little different. And so you start describing it in your brain. So my therapist always used a chair to use it as an example, but I use different things. One of the biggest reasons I do it is actually driving, which sounds terrible, but it's like the steering wheel is round. The steering wheel is like the color. And then you go from like how many buttons it has and what shape they are and the details. And you just go from like large details to small details. And then I'm like, oh, I'm actually okay. Like everything is okay. Where I am is okay. I am safe. My brain is safe. Like those thoughts don't need to exist. And so it just kind of brings me back into a different mindset. Another one is you pick a word. I always like the word think. And so like close my eyes and like spell the word think forwards and backwards and spell it in the sky and all these things. Cause just like brings you to where you are and to get those thoughts to stop. Because my biggest thing is I couldn't get them to stop. Like once they'd start, like I'd just be overwhelmed. And I didn't even think that was possible to have thoughts like that, but it can get very overwhelming. And until you actually learn the tools that therapy can help you with, because for me, I was against therapy because I have a huge family. They're super supportive. I love all of them. Lots of siblings, great friends, all these people that I can vent to and talk to. And I was like, well, why do I need a therapist then? But what I learned was that they were great to vent to, but they weren't going to give me tools to actually aid in my mental health and things like that that I needed for all these years.
Yeah. Wow. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, the journey between concussion recovery and mental health, it's so interrelated.
Oh, yeah. It's very
because
connected.
Your concussion and your symptoms affects your self-worth, affects how you view yourself. It affects how you go about your day. You know, I find when I'm like so tired and cognitively fatigued, I start to feel depressed and everything could be going great in my life. But because my brain and my body is so tired, I start to get depressed and I start to lose sight of everything else. And so what do you do when you start to feel like you're losing sight of how far you've come or you're just focused on the pain that you're in? How do you get out of that?
So I have different things that I do now. So different things that either calm me down or can get the brain to stop. So one of the big things for me is I'm a big kid person. So when I am like mentally struggling, my sister has 3 kids and they're all adorable. And this might not work for people because they're loud, but even just going and helping, putting them to bed and reading bedtime stories and things like that just like helps me be like, you know, I'm here for a reason. I love these little people. I might be struggling, but like purpose kind of thing helps. Another thing for me is I like to find a task that I can do that kind of occupies my brain. So can be tough depending on your brain injury, but puzzles are a big one for me. Because when you're doing a puzzle, your brain can't really wander. It's hard because you have to focus on what you're doing in front of you. So that can be a big one. Journaling and writing is always a good one too. And it doesn't matter. You don't have to journal and write every day. You could write in the book once a month. You could write in it every day for a week and then not touch it for 6. It's just like the purpose of it. Or you could write it all down and throw it out. That works too. I also text myself. Weird thing. I text myself for memory as well because my memory is poor. So when I'm talking to people and they say something and I'm like, oh, I want to look that up later. And I'll like text it to myself quick because then it'll pop up as a notification so I can go through them after. But that can really help talking to people. I used to have this feeling where like, I didn't feel like being a burden on people. And I think that happens a lot when you're like struggling and all these people are helping you all the time. And so I was in a really rough place last fall. I had just like a bad week. And when I have a bad week, sometimes everything goes bad as long well with it. So I ended up FaceTiming one of my best friends while I was having like an anxiety panic attack in my bedroom. And what she did was she forced me to get up. She's like, get up, make toast. I was like, I'm not hungry. She's like, make toast anyways, have a bite. And I like get up and she's like, have soup. She's like, oh, we didn't eat the toast. Let's make soup now. And she was just like, and by the time I had made soup, we were talking about something totally different and my brain was distracted. And I felt guilty for calling her initially, but then I realized that she would rather help me than me struggle on my own. So, and I know I would rather help someone too. So you just have to kind of be able to get over that and ask for help when you need it, because most of those people are there for you. Like that's why I run a support community, because it's full of people that are willing to help whenever they can.
Yeah. And having a support system is so important. And you just made a good point, utilizing your support system, yes. right? Like, you might know that you have a friend or a family member that cares about you, but do you call them when you're struggling? You know, it doesn't help if you don't utilize it.
Mm-hmm. And it's hard to call.
Yeah,
I think I like texted her. I was like, I'm falling apart. And then she's like, FaceTime me. I'm like, okay. Like, and there's me like bawling, like having a meltdown, like couldn't breathe on the phone, but like, she's my best friend. And she was there when I was in the hospital and she's been there through a lot of it. And I'm like, it's okay. Cause now she knows how I am. And then you get like the check-ins for a few days and it helps you mentally as well on both sides.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you have if you could just share like a last word of advice for somebody who's struggling with their mental health in their recovery?
I always like to tell people to take it one day at a time. And that's because we get really focused on goal setting. And especially in North America, we're really bad for like, this is the career. You go to school, you get this career, you have a family. And like, it's just like, they act like it's supposed to be so planned out. But it doesn't have to be. You don't have to plan anything out. You can just take it one day at a time. And if you focus on one day and not the next, it does a lot better, especially for pain and things like that. Like when I used to be in a lot of pain, if I just reminded myself, I'm in pain today, but that doesn't mean I have to be in pain tomorrow. And that mindset just really helped me go, okay, this isn't forever. This is just one day at a time. Let's get through today. And then tomorrow will be different.
That's good. So what made you want to start your podcast and support groups?
Yeah. So when I stopped riding, I needed to find something else to do. So what I started with was different sports. So I like texted in friend group chats and was like, figure out a sport that I can do that I can't get hurt and won't flare up symptoms. So there was like tons of suggestions. And so I just tried different things every day. And it was just like a hilarious thing of me testing out sports that I could do. And so I got into archery for a bit, actually, because it worked on my concussion and recovery too, because it was like balance and like you have to keep a calm mind while you're doing it. So like it was really beneficial, but it didn't hit the adrenaline junkie side of me. But then I decided I should help people. And so I got asked to write an article about retiring as an athlete young from show jumping. And so I wrote that and then that kind of went all over the place. And then it was like another year until I tried to figure out what I wanted to do. I wanted to like write a blog and I did blog posts. And then my brother said, you talk too much. You should start a podcast. And he's like, you love to talk. Like you literally don't stop talking ever, which you could probably tell. But I was like, okay. So then I decided to do the blog and the podcast. And the blog, I think, lasted me about 6 months and I quit it. Maybe not even. Found it's not my favorite avenue, apparently. So the podcast was I wanted to talk to people and just create awareness about it was my biggest thing, was just like, how can I help people get through this? People have no idea this exists. People don't know that there's other people like me. One of my biggest things going through this was I thought I was the only person on the planet going through it. I know it's not true, but that's how you feel internally when going through this. Yeah. So I did that. And then the support group and the support community, I kind of just wanted to create a better place. I had a lot of people on like social media commenting and things like that. And they were always asking questions. And I started to realize that like a lot of people could answer each other's questions and they would give a different perspective than what I can give. So the support groups are really close to the point where like the other day we had people screaming at their, I was laughing on Zoom. Like I couldn't stop laughing. I almost fell over because there's so many people. Like we started talking about the medical system and then people started like going off. But it's just like a really good place to be. And I also wanted, I find social media very overwhelming with all the ads and flashiness and all that. So I just wanted to create a safe place to go separate from that and to keep my life separate, because I found a lot of the time I would like add people and then people would be like adding me all the time and I'd be like, no, like this is my brain injury me, this is my other me, like we're separate. But now I'm all one, but it was kind of nice to create another place for a safe place for people to go and ask questions, like whatever they want. People ask things and then they get answers from other survivors as well as me. And it just creates a safe network. Like I do one-on-ones with people every day of the week. And I just like helping people get through something that I went through, because I think it can be a lot better than the way I did it.
That's so nice. And how does doing that help your mental health?
So it does both.
Okay. Question is asked, how does doing that impact your mental health?
It's great, but it's true. Helping people is wonderful. Like it gives me like a purpose and it helps me that way. But it's also emotionally a roller coaster to remember how other people are struggling, how much I struggled. So that part is tough, but very rewarding. Like I cry a lot when I get messages on social media, things from people, but I'm just happy to be helping people get through this a lot better than I did.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
We always ask for words of hope because this is Hope Survives Podcast. And so what are your final words of hope to anybody listening?
Oh, check in on yourself. It's important to check in on the people around you, but if you're sleeping all day, every day, or you're not leaving your house, or maybe you're just really distant from people, social interaction does a lot better for you than you think, even if you are an introvert. So make sure you're checking in on how you're doing and then changing how you're doing. I'm having a really bad week. Well, what can I change and how can I make it better?
That's great. Thank you so much, Bella. I really appreciate you coming on the podcast and sharing some of your story with us.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me on.
All right, I hope you have a great day.
Yeah, you too.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Hope Survives Podcast. I hope that you enjoyed today's episode. Make sure to subscribe and stay tuned as more episodes will be coming each week. And check out hopeafterheadinjury.com for more. I'll see you next time. And remember, there's always hope.